Supercharged with Ali Geary on RTE Radio 1.
Hello, welcome along to Supercharged. Tá fáilte roimh go léir. Cad é an scéal this evening. It's the final episode in the current series of Supercharged. So before we kick off the show, I want to check in to see how you're all doing. Like, how are you really doing? Are you embracing the chaos that's facing in the lead up to Christmas? Or are you blissfully ignoring it and avoiding the inevitable question like me? So are you all set? Or maybe you are all set. And more power to you if you are, even though I'm slightly jealous. We'll all get there. That's what I keep telling myself anyway. And it is fair to say that stress levels can be on the rise right now. Tempers can fray and arguments can happen, silly or otherwise. Maybe you dread this time of year because you're reminded of turbulent Christmases of the past. That happens too. Like, we know arguing can be helpful. Like, it's even healthy to a point because it can clear the air in some cases. But it's making up after an argument that can be the tricky bit. I was talking about this on Instagram recently and some of you have already been getting in touch about this topic.
So I think it's difficult to articulate and put into words after an argument how you're feeling.
Communication's a really big factor.
I find that when you are having an argument with someone, it's the best opportunity you have to actually connect with that person.
Sometimes the most important thing is just giving them the floor to speak to you.
So we've Alison Keating in studio this evening giving us tips and advice on how to navigate in the aftermath of those heated exchanges. She's also going to be answering your questions. You can send them in and I'm going to ask them on your behalf. You can text 51551, send us an audio message or a question using WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32 or email supercharged@rte.ie if it's a little bit longer or maybe you want to make a comment. Anything at all, send it in. Now, coming up a little later, we'll have our final Supercharged speed quiz of the year with one of the biggest stars of the year, so stay tuned for that. And because it's the last show of the season and it's coming towards the end of 2025, we want to find out what's the best thing that you have done for your health and well-being this year. Could be anything at all, big or small. We were out and about this week asking people that very question.
One thing that I have taken up this year that has improved my health is running. I joined a run club and I do weekly runs. I feel it improves my mood, I'm in a happier mindset and my fitness has improved over the year. I've also made lots of new friends and my goal next year is to run a half marathon.
One thing I took up this year to improve my health was HYROX training. I feel like it has improved my overall strength and my fitness, and I done my first HYROX event last September.
For me, I find arts and crafts as my meditation outlet. This year I actually started a local craft and chat group and it's been really good for my health and well-being. It's a space where you can bring any craft you like, or even if you want to just come for a cup and a chat. But for me, it's all about connecting with others and relaxing in a crafty environment.
The best thing I've done this year for my health and well-being is going to the gym every night after work for 45 minutes to 60 minutes. It's a great de-stressor and really helps me cope and relax with the stress of work.
First this evening, I'm chatting with holistic gardener and author Fionn O'Nuaillean. He's going to talk to us about what our gardens and nature give us at this time of year to nourish our health and well-being. Welcome back to Supercharged, Fionn. It's always great to have you. You're a wealth of information and knowledge, and I always learn so much from you, so I'm looking forward to this chat. Let's start with what's currently left in our gardens and what we can do with it.
Yeah, so we're in that kind of tricky phase of the year now where, you know, we're in the dark half of the year, and it means the day length is less and the kind of the temperatures have lessened as well. So most plants are either gone into hibernation or they're getting ready to go into hibernation. And as they do that, lots of the phytochemicals that we would harvest from the garden for health are starting to retreat out of the plant into the roots. So that's brilliant if you want to dig up your dandelion or your burdock and make, you know, your coffee to kickstart the gallbladder or whatever. That's brilliant because they're intensified. But if you're leaning into looking to get your kind of lemon balm to have a lemon chamomile and cup of tea to ease your anxiety over the Christmas time, well, the phytochemicals in there, they're not strong enough as if they were in June, July, August. So really what we're looking at is, well, what's still kind of left? And I find a couple of things are still there. Just this morning, I was just in my own garden and my mint looks brilliant.
And we haven't had a whole pile of frost. Really,
and we haven't had the frost, so stuff hasn't been triggered. And, and this is the kind of, dare I say it, like with the climate change stuff, our seasons are shifting and some of that is bad and some of that's not so bad. So the fact that the mint is still there, now I'll harvest that when I go home and I'll freeze it.
What's that good for?
So mint, well, mint is really, really interesting in terms of, in summertime, if we drink it, it cools down the body. It's really good for gastrointestinal complications. If we make a tea and cool it and spray it on, it's good for kind of prickly heat and that sort of stuff. But it's a multi-seasonal herb. So at this time of the year, what mint also does is it's a bronchial aerator. So it opens up all the alveoli in the lungs. It decongests the nasal passage, the throat and the sinuses. So just now when you're on the commute into work and somebody five seats behind you does the sneeze, that's the perfect thing to go home and take the mint.
Out into your gardens and look for the mint.
Look for the mint, get and freeze it. Bring it in now and freeze it. I mean, you can dry it, but you can also freeze it. And then you have it right away through the winter time, anytime there's a sniffle on the rise.
I think when you were saying there about mint in the summer, people were thinking, oh yeah, that's why we have the mojitos. That doesn't count.
It doesn't count.
That's not what we're talking about.
It doesn't count. You know, the alcohol cancels it out, you know. But
rosemary and sage as well.
And rosemary and sage, yeah. Now, sage is going to go over very, very quickly. Rosemary will last right the way through all year round, pretty much. But its phytochemicals at this time of the year can actually be strengthened by a touch of cold. So the rosemary acid that's contained within it can actually strengthen up. It's one of the few that gets better rather than worse. And
you know, what about things like cabbages and leeks that people...
So yeah, so if you're a productive gardener, as in if you have an allotment or you're growing
He's
your veg at your
me.
Back. Yeah, yeah. Well, really there what happens is, and this is about kind of tying into seasonal eating. What you eat in a particular season generally is the medicine to the ailments that you're going to encounter in that season. So at this time of the year, your tomatoes are gone, your strawberries are gone, there's no vitamin C knocking around. But what you'll have is you'll have leeks, you'll have garlic, onions, cabbages, brassicas, kales. They all contain a lot of sulforaphanes. So when we ingest them into the body, the sulforaphanes, the organic sulfur, the sulfur kicks our immune system into high gear. So they're really very good at being antifungal and antibacterial, which is exactly what we're dealing with between now and February, do you know?
You were talking and you mentioned about dandelions, but pine needle tea as well is something that this time of year can be popular.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Now, pine needle tea would have been used traditionally by sailors going on long journeys to avoid scurvy. It's packed full of vitamin C. So I've just said vitamin C has gone out of the garden, but it's still there in the hedgerow. So if you can go out and gather your pine needles, make a tea packed full of vitamin C, that's your immune system boost as well. That supplements your vitamin C that's missing from the diet at this time of the year. But pine needles are really, really interesting because the terpenes, they release volatile oils into the atmosphere. And those terpenes are very close to cannabinoids. Now, if you remember, cannabinoids became very, very popular as a cure for everything from kind of epilepsy to ingrown toenail. That's not what they do. What they do, what cannabinoids does in the system is it dials down inflammation and it's analgesic. It takes away pain. So it's not just in the cannabis plant. It's in stuff like skullcap, which traditionally Irish people would have been used. The early monks, when they were trying to put the herbals together in the 8th century, are mentioning kind of skullcap for this stuff. It has cannabinoids contained within it that goes into the cannabinoid receptors in the body to dial down inflammation and to kill pain. But the cannabinoids are really interesting because the terpenes that are in the pine, they can be absorbed into the skin and inhaled into the nose. So if you go for a walk at this time of the year, you're getting into the cold air, and 15 minutes of cold air will switch on your immune system as opposed to being overly muffled up. And you're also out there, your forest bathing is having a particular purpose because you're choosing to go to a pine forest with all of this volatile oils in the air.
Brilliant. So, because Joe, for some people I'm listening saying they love the idea of being able to make these teas and make them, but they mightn't, you know how or have the confidence, but actually getting out in nature and absorbing it is another way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going kayaking at this time of the year, okay, you don't want to spill over into the water and be completely frogalized, but it's the fact that you're around negative ions, which are really good to drag all of the stresses and static electricity out of the body. So getting out at this time of the year, don't pack it in because it looks like it's too wet or it's too cold. do it even more so, because that's the immune system boost. If you're sitting at home with the central heating on and the woolly hat on your head, the cold and flu that you have there is gone. There's an old Irish saying, which is green Christmases fill graveyards. And it's that thing that you need the cold to kill the pathogens off, the pathogens that are in the air, the pathogens that are in your body, the pathogens that are in the soil. So the coldness is what does the positive benefit.
So that's why my mother was opening up all the windows in the middle of December and we were giving out to her, but she was trying to get the fresh air in,
get the cold air in. And let the COVID out the window. You know, so if you're sitting on the bus.
I'm sorry, ma'am, we were giving you a hard time. But it's freezing in here.
Yeah, but if you're on the bus and you see all the condensation on the window, that's everybody's sneeze and breath. You know, like, it's icky to think about it, but that's where it is. So if you open the window, you let that all dissipate.
Get it all out. Let's talk a bit about, like, even the hawthorn for heart health.
Yeah, so hawthorn's a brilliant plant because the foliage is edible and there's phytochemicals in the foliage that's good for the heart. But the berries, and they're still there at this time of the year, and they get sweeter after a frost. They have a lovely mealy kind of texture to them. They're really good. They help the heart pump more blood around the body, so they help us get our brains more oxygenated. So
do you need to cook them, or how can they consume them?
Lots of people eat them raw now. You'd need to kind of spit out the seeds on all sorts of fruit, including apples, because they all contain little cyanides in it. Now, you'd want to be all day eating, you know, to get enough poison into your system to do any form of damage. But you can also cook them, and they're really good with game and things like that. So are rowan berries. You know, there are sloes out there. There's lots on the hedgerow that's there. The issue is where you are in the country. If the lapwings have come in from Scandinavia, good luck. They're going to get all the berries before you do. So if you spot it, now is the week. This is the time to go harvest stuff. Stick it in a freezer bag, put it in the freezer. You have access to it then for the next couple of months.
Sloes are very bitter.
Yeah.
I was reading about how actually things that are really bitter and that we eat is really good because our brain registers them as toxins.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
This is fascinating. So this is why people, this is where coffee came from. It's the bitter in coffee, which is normally in springtime, again, through different monastic centres, Islamic, you know, tradition and Christian tradition, the monks and the devotees took coffee or coffee substitutes, bitter tonics, in order to cleanse the system. So basically most plants that have a sweet flavour, well, we know they've evolved a sweet flavour because they want us to eat them and spread their seeds somewhere else. Plants that develop a bitter context, it's a poison in it. They don't want to be browsed by deer or by humans or whatever. So we humans know when we taste something that's really bitter, it's probably poisonous. And that triggers us to cause the gallbladder and the liver and the kidneys to go into overdrive and flush all the toxins out of the system. So your cup of coffee traditionally now, if it's a mocha loca chocolata with 15 marshmallows in it, forget about it. But, you know, a normal coffee or a dandelion root coffee or anything with a bitter flavour. So sucking a slow does the same thing. It gives you that bitter burst and it tricks your brain into thinking, I need to get...
It's like a natural detox.
It's a natural detox, but even better, it doesn't just stop at the toxins. It works on stored fats. So it's a great way of, like, kickstarting, if you're going to go on a diet or whatever, of kickstarting your diet, because already your fats are starting to break down. It's like the rosemary we were talking about earlier on. People traditionally cook rosemary with lamb. It's the rosmeric acid that's in the rosemary that goes into the lamb fats and makes them more less likely to be stored in the system, more digestible. So often when we patch things together, does it reason behind it? And very often it's a medicinal or a health thing behind it. It's not just a flavour comparison. Yeah.
So nature knew and knows what we need before we even know ourselves. Yeah. That's amazing. Okay, let's talk about fighting off colds and viruses. Elderberries.
Elderberries are brilliant now. They're probably as good as gone from most parts of the country now at this time of the year. Kind of your last kind of chance for getting a lot of stuff is in and around between September and Halloween. And then the puka comes out and the puka urinates on the berries. And that's just their way of culturally codifying, don't go near the blackberries now next week because they're going to be gone off. There's nothing in them, you know. So it's a way of keeping kids away from gone off food. But the elderberries are really, really interesting. First of all, they have a lot of vitamin C in them. But more importantly, they have this thing where all viruses have this kind of Velcro grip where they adhere into the cellular wall. So where macrophages and our immune system can't swim around like sharks and gobble them up out of the bloodstream, the elderberries melt those Velcro grips. So they can't adhere to the wall. They're in the the system, and our own immune system can come and gobble them up like a Pac-Man going around, can eat everything up. So elderberries are brilliant at this time of the year. If you haven't gone out previously and got your harvest and made your syrups, every chemist in Ireland, every health store in Ireland has elderberry products, from lozenges to syrups to whatever, right? So all brands, whatever, are available, you know, you can get access to it.
The rowan berries or the mountain ash, they can be used for sauce?
They were traditionally used with
because we'd have a lot of them around the place. You'd see them now, although you were probably fighting with the birds.
And it's interesting because lots of the stuff after the frost, they develop an alcohol content within them. So you'll see the boards.
You'll be getting
drunk.
People's attention now. The boards get tipsy, literally.
And then they go even more on it because, again, they're leaning in for the, it's not just the chocolate, it's the liqueur. So, you know, give it 2 weeks and you'll literally be fighting with the boards to get the
berries
off the trees.
You never look at the birds the same way again.
But yeah, rowans are really good. They used to be used, again, they're a meaty thing. You do need to cook them. They contain lycopene in it, which is a really good thing for fighting different types of cancers and mutagens, you know. So it's, you know, there's a lot behind it. Mm-hmm. But traditionally in Ireland, the Fianna used to use it to cook with their, after they've hunted the deer or the boar or whatever.
Spices, you know, they're used a lot in winter and around Christmas for a reason. Let's talk a little bit about some of them. I was fascinated to learn even about cinnamon.
Oh, well, cinnamon is amazing because cinnamon lowers blood sugar. So if you have, again, at this time of the year, we're all leaning into the biscuits and the bit of extra panettone or whatever. You know, it's just there. It's in every Christmas ad.
We deserve it.
And we deserve it, yeah. And it's that thing of, like, as your serotonin drops at this time of year, you have more melatonin in the body. And melatonin isn't just the sleep hormone, it's the hunger hormone. So naturally you're getting more hungry. But if you have a bit of cinnamon on your toast in the morning or on your porridge in the morning, it stabilizes. It's like a natural insulin. It stabilizes your blood sugars across the day.
Because I just thought when you put it, you know, like the cinnamon buns, that you're making it sweeter. But actually, it's almost like you're helping to reverse the impact of the sugar.
This is the thing. It's like when they came out a couple of years ago about if you have an avocado with your steak or your burger, it does the fats get in the way and stop the other trans fats from sticking in the system. It's the sweetness of the cinnamon, but it's also the phytochemical agents within it that stop you grabbing sugars and holding on to them, especially this time of year. Every bit of sweetness you want to get, the body wants to go, oh, well, I might not eat again, because we haven't evolved enough to realise we're not still pushing mammoths off the cliff, you know, and that every time you turn around, there's a chocolate or a slice of cake or the sugar, even in toothpaste. So we haven't copped on to that. Our bodies are still thinking,
maybe we don't want to either.
Yeah, we feel the cold and we think, oh my God, I'm starving. I need to get a donut in, you know. So
let's talk other spices then, even for circulation purposes.
Yeah, so even if you think of everything that's kind of matched together, so even things like pepper. Like pepper is really good, but pepper was matched with food before refrigeration. So it's antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal. If you ate the gone off meat or the slightly gone over fruit, it stopped your stomach from going there. But a lot of the spices that we would use, nutmeg even this time of year, all the stuff that you would throw into the eggnog, any of the stuff that would go in with the mince pies, they're all cardiotonics. They're all stuff that keeps circulation, specifically peripheral circulation, on the go. And that's what gets affected at this time of the year, because your fingers and your toes are more prone to catching the cold quicker than the kind of the core of your body, you know.
Brilliant. Now, before I go, we are asking people on the show this evening, what's the best thing they've done for their health and well-being in 2025? So I'm going to put it to you now.
Now, I'm a weirdo. so
that means your answer is going to be really interesting. So give it to us.
Well, for me, I love kind of aphorisms and affirmations and kind of looking at kind of Zen philosophy.
That means I'm a weirdo as well then, because
yeah,
I like
but,
that
but
too.
I think they're really good. They're like ancestral nuggets, you know, wisdom passed on generation to generation. So in terms of like the Zen stuff, there's a brilliant saying, where would the gardener be without weeds? And that's really saying, like, don't grumble the stuff that you have to do. Like, you'll know as an athlete, you know, the early mornings, the training, the work, that's what makes you the champ. That's what gets you on the podium. That's what gets you to lift the cup. So it's the same, like, as a gardener. The weeding is what makes the garden good. So I use them all the time. Irish proverbs, you know, sunshine follows gloom, you know, the longest day has its ebb. These are all great psychological kind of recourses to go to and reset the psyche. But the start of the year, the one I put in place has a Christian context, and it's consider the lilies. So Jesus was given this kind of parable to his disciples that was, consider the lilies, they neither toil nor weep. Now, I think what it actually is they neither toil nor reap nor sow nor spin. And basically what he was saying is, will you all just stop jockeying for position? Will you all just calm down and relax? Stop fretting that I'm walking around healing people and we don't know where the next meal is coming from. God will provide, the universe will provide, faith will provide. Have a bit of confidence.
Trust the process.
Trust the process. That's be yourself.
What the modern day
be
version,
yourself.
Yeah.
So I put that into place. And what I found was fascinating was, even though I have all of these tools for kind of my psychological well-being, the last couple of years was a bit tricky for me with certain things, and, like, you know, professional disappointments and after COVID, lots of the work
and
I
a lot
used
of people
didn't
can
come
relate
back.
To that.
Everybody
yeah.
had that. But I found that the kind of the knot in the stomach was becoming the kind of pain in the stomach and was becoming the acid reflux. And the minute I decided to stop striving, to stop looking for where the next piece of work was coming from, all of that disappeared. And I went, oh my God, I had completely forgotten that all of these things, the wisdom, is not just about mental health. There's more going on than mental health. And your mental health will affect your physical health, and your physical health will affect your mental health. And we... You know, I call myself the holistic gardener. I realise, actually, you need to be more holistic.
Well, I'm glad you asked the question now.
Sorry.
Well, I'm glad. No, because I think a lot of people will be able to resonate
and it's not,
with that.
It's not a panacea for everybody. Some people listening will go, oh, no, look, I need to keep striving. I need to plan the career. I need to do this, whatever. It works for me. Yeah. You know, it works for me to just let go of stuff and... whatever will be. If you are the lily in the field, if the bee comes and fertilises you, brilliant. If it doesn't, so what?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Fionn. Fionn O'Nolan's books are in shops and online at mercierpress.ie. And have a happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas
to you. Thank you. Time now for the final Supercharged Speed Quiz of 2025. And I'm absolutely delighted to be getting the chance to put some questions to one of our favourite television stars of this past year. From The Traitors, Paddy Maloney. Paddy, welcome to Supercharged.
Thank you very much for having me, Anna.
We are delighted.
It's a pleasure is mine.
Ah, well, you know what now? It's been a bit of a whirlwind for you, I think it's fair to say, over the last few months. There's been a lot happening for you. How have you been adjusting to life since?
Adjusting is a very good term, actually, because it is an adjustment. I would never have expected this, to be honest. And it has just taken off. And it's all taken off positively, which is brilliant. I'm really enjoying it, to be honest. And people, the positivity coming from people here in my own hometown of Kilmallock and all over the country where I've met people, just, you know, random strangers walking up and saying hello, Paddy.
Or King Paddy, as you've been affectionately known to many people across the country now.
That's not the worst thing I've been known as in my life, to be honest.
But there is lots happening for you. Like, you're featuring in the Panto at the Three Olympia as the wizard, no less. And
no
then
less,
I can't, it would be remiss of me not to mention the elephant in the room, that at the big announcement last week, Dancing with the Stars. Congratulations.
Dancing with the Stars. Can you imagine it?
How are you feeling about that?
I am looking forward to it. But I'm also, you know, worried in my own sense, you know, because it's a big commitment and it's a massive, it's a massive ask of a 68-year-old body as well.
Not
as everything else.
Not to bother you. I did it back a few years ago, and I can tell you the only thing, have the ice packs ready. Right,
okay,
and you know, you'll be humbled by it. No matter how fit I thought I was, let me tell you, you are humbled by it. But you'll have the best experience, because you're a man that likes a challenge, I'd say, and you won't turn away from it.
I do like the challenge, I'll have to say, and I'm enjoying it at the moment. The training has started.
Good man.
And I am enjoying that.
How are the fitness levels?
Well, do you know, I swim for my exercise, and I would pump out 100 lengths in maybe just over under an hour.
Not bother you. Now save all that for the quiz, because I'm going to be asking you all that now here. And you said you like a challenge, so this quiz might put you to the test here. And you might have been good at keeping secrets in The Traitors, but we want you to reveal all here in the Supercharged Speed Quiz. So are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, Paddy Maloney, what is your healthiest habit?
Exercise.
What is your least healthy habit?
That fry on a Saturday evening, you know, the grill, full grill.
The whole shebang, the works.
The whole shebang.
Yeah. Ah, that's good too, though. We all need a bit of that. It's all about balance.
It's only once a week, though. It's only once a week.
Exactly. Have you a favourite exercise and why?
I have. I swim. I love swimming. It's just... it's just in my own space, and I just really enjoy getting into the water and just moving for that hour. I love it.
Brilliant. What is your least favourite exercise?
You know, all my life, the least favourite exercise I've ever had to do was weights in the gym. Mm. That's just me. I just didn't like it, you know. I found it a bit boring, you know, to be honest. So that's just me.
On Dance with the Stars, you'd be throwing people up over your heads. That'll be plenty of strength training for you to be doing in the coming weeks.
I see. There's a little chance of that now, Anna, to be honest.
I'm telling you, stranger things are happening. Watch this face. Right, we're going to do some this or that questions. Walk or run?
Oh, walk.
Salt or sweet?
Salt.
Early bird or night owl?
Absolute night owl.
Love it. I'm the same as you. Do you meditate?
No.
Well, how do you relax?
I relax, listen to podcasts and things like that, you know, in my own space, yeah.
Yeah, what, any podcast you're listening to at the moment that you're enjoying?
I listen to a lot of the Trump stuff, to be honest, for my sins.
Educational.
Well, that's education in its own way, to be honest.
What's always in your medicine cabinet?
You know, I've asthma, so there's always an inhaler in there.
Okay. You know. And do you have a skincare routine?
Absolutely not.
I was going to say, because you were glowing on the trainers, we'd have been all going, what is he doing? You're just healthy. It's just a healthy glow from the swimming, so from all the blood pumping around the body.
I think that might be it, yeah.
If you could have one superpower for a day, what would you choose?
Do you know, I've said this before actually to somebody else, and it's invisibility.
Oh, why so?
Do you know, and one of the reasons I gave actually for it was, I'd love to be in the Oval Office for one day.
Oh.
Invisible. And listen to what's going on in there. I know I sound obsessed with Trump, but I just cannot get over.
Interesting. I thought it was just because, you know, you're just so famous now, you can't even walk into your local shop to pick up the milk.
Oh, yeah. Well, that does become a chore at times, okay, now, which it didn't before.
It'll come in handy either way. Right, well, have you a favourite body part, your own now?
I know, yeah. Okay, do you know, there mightn't be any more, but I used to always work on my arms with the swimming and the shoulders and that kind of thing, you know. So if I was to say anything, that would be...
Well, you'll be showing them off in a few weeks' time. We can't wait for it. Get them in the sleeveless tops. That's... I'm saying that now to the costume department. Geez. Right, we're running out of time. What makes you stressed?
Traffic.
Me too. What makes you calm?
Just relaxing with a book or whatever, or you'd read the newspaper, that kind of thing. Just sit down with that.
What makes you laugh?
What makes me laugh? The grandkids.
And what makes you happy?
Getting into my camper with my wife and heading off down the road. Just didn't care where we were going and just get there and that's it, yeah.
Absolutely love that. That's the first time we've ever had that answer. Where's the best or most random place you've ever been in the camper van?
Yeah, the best, well, you see, I'd be honest, France is all... I know we love Ireland and everything else, but if you're going to Europe, France is where we've always gone and we just love it. And there's an island down, I probably won't pronounce it properly, it's called Ile-de-Ré.
Oh.
It's near La Rochelle. And we just love that island. It's beautiful on it.
There might be a lot of new people in flux there with all the tourists, because if King Paddy's going there, they'll all want to be there, Paddy. Well, Gweary, thank you so much for coming on and taking part in the Supercharged Speed Quiz. Before you go, I have one final question, because we're asking everybody in the show today. What's the best thing that you did for your own health and well-being this year?
For my own health and well-being this year, I suppose, to be honest, I stayed exercising because it's easy. Stop doing it, you know. And I've always said, and this year, like every other year, I've just continued on as usual. So that's the best thing I keep doing for my health.
Well, you've given us fine inspiration here this evening. Thank you so much for taking part, and I wish you and all your family a happy Christmas. And I wish you the very best of luck next year. You'll have an absolute ball and Dance with the Stars, and we can't wait to watch you.
I'm really looking forward to it, and I will be looking for advice.
Oh, come here. I'm on speed dial anytime. Don't worry. Keep smiling and enjoy the panto too. Slán.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Now, I'm asking everybody the best thing that they've done for their health and well-being in 2025. So I suppose I should really tell you what I've done. Now, this is still a work in progress, but definitely for me, saying no more has been the best thing that I've done. I'm a quintessential people pleaser at heart. I hate to let people down, but I've started to understand that actually saying more or saying no more, it frees up time, because time is our most precious asset. So it's something that if you know how to do it, you can tell me how to do it, because I'm always looking to improve. But saying no has been something that has been good for my own health and well-being. And here's what more of you had to say.
So So this year I made a conscientious decision to make some time for myself. Just put aside an hour every day. It's been a bit easier for me now because I've retired. But I put aside that hour, just be it go for a walk, to crochet, knit, read a book, just go to the shops and have a cup of coffee. It's my me time. I unwind and I feel a lot better for it.
I've started yoga and meditation, which has really helped, and Pilates, yeah. I obviously would have been suffering with menopause, so it helped all that as well.
I've started Pilates and I've also started weight training and PT to try and help with through the menopause, like for to help the muscles and the bones and things like that. Like, so yeah.
A lot of cycling. Three or four times a week and at weekends, and plenty of sleep.
I started to implement a more regular gym routine, which has given me more of a structure in my life. I've also got out for more outdoor walks during my lunch, and the main benefit of these is that I'm more active throughout the day.
Asking people what's the best thing they've done for their health and well-being in 2025. Have a listen.
I started face yoga, which is kind of like 3 to 5 minutes or whatever you kind of like want. I'm not very good in keeping it up, but when I do it, it definitely makes a difference, so I recommend it.
Definitely I've taken up Pilates, which has been fantastic, twice a week, and I walk 3 or 4 times a week, which has been great for my health and well-being, and getting out and meeting people, which is really important, I think, you know, socialising, getting involved in whatever you can within your community. I think it's fantastic, yeah.
This year I have started composing my own music. I am a musician, I'm a trad musician, but this year I've actually started to make and compose my own music, which is something that has benefited me massively. I've learned lots and it's a great way for me to be creative, and it's a great way for me to de-stress as well when I come home from work.
I think outdoor running was a real improvement. I trained for the Dublin Half Marathon this year, which we did with my husband. We got married in July, so it was kind of our half marathon before the wedding. But leading up to that, I thought outside running was really improved my health and just feeling good overall.
Huge thanks to everybody for sharing those. I love hearing all of the different kinds of variety that we had there. Next up, making up after an argument can be difficult, whether it's with a partner, parent, child, family member or friend. So what should we be doing after an argument, or not doing, as the case may be? Well, joining me with advice on how to behave if tempers become heated during the stress of the coming weeks is psychologist Alison Keating, author of It's All Too Much. Welcome to Supercharged, Alison.
Thank you so much.
Delighted to have you here. Let's get into it all in a second. But before that, let's have a listen to some people's personal experiences and stories and even advice that's come in.
I don't think it's that difficult to make up after an argument. I think if the two people involved are good at communicating with each other and there has been open communication throughout the entire relationship, I don't think it should be an issue.
So I think it's difficult to articulate and put into words after an argument how you're feeling and to like get across to the person that you obviously want to make up and stuff.
I find that when you are having an argument with someone, it's the best opportunity you have to actually connect with that person and be vulnerable about your needs and wants, and that actually should improve the relationship moving forward.
Yeah, sometimes if you're trying to find someone else's perspective after an argument, like sometimes the most important thing is just giving them the floor to speak to and listening to them, because if you don't get their perspective, then you're always going to be in, like, not in the know about what actually was happening. And listening to them is more important than, you know, whatever you're arguing about anyway beforehand. Whenever you get into an argument, it's easy just to start to defend yourself and to feel like you have to keep defending yourself. But then obviously after a while, you have to take the bigger picture of it and like think of the time you had with them or the relationship or the friendship it was, and that there's more important things that are there than what an argument sort of led to. It depends on who I have the argument with. If it's with, you know, someone I have like a deep connection with, I'd say it would be generally a bit easier, you know. Like with my mother, for example, I wouldn't, kind of more hard to make up after an argument. Or for someone like, you know, my best friend or my girlfriend or something. I still find it quite hard to hold myself accountable sometimes. So I think it's hard, but it's doable. I think it's necessary. So I always, you know, try to do it, you know.
So it depends on how much people were hurt in the argument, I feel. It also depends, I feel, on people's maturity and people's outlook on it, if the other person is considered. I feel sometimes people are so caught up in how they feel and how upset that they are that they forget maybe how their actions could have hurt other people too. Depending on what the argument is, it can be quite difficult to get over depending on how hurt someone is, because things can linger, and even when you forgive, sometimes it's difficult to forget.
Alison, lots to unpack there. Mm. There's lots of different themes coming up and that we're going to deal with in the next while in the chat. But I suppose let's dive in first of all and say, like, what's the first thing you should do after an argument?
I'd say go for what I call a stompy walk, right?
Okay.
And be really, like, normally people are angry, mm-hmm. right? And I think sometimes we're just too quick to kind of, you know, conceptualize why am I so angry rather than actually feel what we're actually feeling. Our body actually gives us all the clues.
Mm-hmm. And I totally know what you mean when you say stompy.
Oh, yeah.
I think the onomatopoeia of that, everyone knows what you mean. Get it out. Get the emotion out.
And like just match and kind of honor how you actually feel. So sometimes if you know that anger is there, I do think of a walk where you're kind of in your head. And like after 20 minutes, you will come back a different person. So I think what's really interesting, and I suppose I would come at this again always from listen to your body. We're often trying to kind of intellectualize our emotions, but our emotions are so much more kind of elegant than that, and they just show up in our body. So it's like, what am I actually feeling? And the anger can come first because you feel like it's so unfair, and how could she say that? How could he do that? And we get into that kind of, we get stuck in that kind of rumination of like having the argument nearly in our own head. Like, do you ever have that argument that, you know, that you wanted to have?
Yeah.
So
I could have said this and I should have said that.
And do you know what that happens?
Why?
So what happens is, say you're in an argument with someone and your body starts to flood. So basically your heart goes over 100 beats per minute. Now, you might look totally calm on the outside. But we did this in Then Comes Marriage, and we had people, their hearts, you know, hooked up. And we had a paramedic there, I remember. And one person who was doing it, they looked absolutely like nothing was going in. So we were actually initiating an argument for science purposes. And the other person was getting kind of angry. But the person's heart rate who was going through the roof was the person who looked totally calm.
So they were internalizing.
They were completely internalizing. And often women do internalize. And then the man in this situation was externally kind of like, bah, 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 and saying how he was feeling. And she was like, But looking on, and I was making him more angry because he's like, you know, you're not actually hearing what I'm actually saying. You don't really care. But we actually had to cut it because her heart rate was going through the roof. And she was just finding it so difficult to actually express in that moment how she actually felt. So I just think it's all about understanding kind of how our nervous system reacts. And when we go into that fight or flight, so our frontal part of our brain, it basically shuts down those beautiful things that we want to say. And when we're on that solo walk, stomping and giving out, you know, as we're walking along.
15 years later, I'm still having those conversations. You should have said that in that argument.
But the words don't come to you because you actually block off that area of your brain, because your brain is kind of in that moment in that kind of fight or flight mode. So your body goes, we need to kind of work through what's going on right now. For some people, arguments are actually quite re-triggering for them. So say you grew up in a kind of a chaotic family and where anger was, well, scary and dangerous. To another person where they never had arguments in a house like that, they're like, I only said this, but you have such a strong reaction to it. So you have a mismatch. And like some of the things that people were saying there, I loved the level of understanding.
Yeah, and maturity.
Oh, the maturity was
sounded quite young voices.
Such young voices, but the emotional kind of intelligence that's really was so genuine and generous in those pieces is that, you know, often in an argument, people will say, for God's sake, I only said. You're so sensitive, you know, and that will set somebody off. Whereas if we just go off what actually happened in the argument, you're never, ever going to sort out what triggered the person and what it actually brought up for them. So I think it's just about a returning to yourself, go out for that angry walk and kind of just allow your emotions to actually regulate. So say, like, if we take Christmas, for example, I do actually think sometimes there is too much heat in the kitchen, right? But actually saying it. So say you can feel the tempo changing in the room. People are getting a bit snippy. They're getting a bit impatient. Just say, look, do you know what? I'm going to step out for 5 minutes. I don't want to say something I'm going to regret. If it's okay to set up that at that moment. When you're serving up the dinner, that's not the best time. You're definitely going for a fight then. And just, you know, have that walk, come back, and then you go and talk about it when your nervous system is calm, because then you can actually have the words that you actually want to say. Because I do think the timing of an argument really, really is important in how you start an argument. So basically, you know, if you start with a, you always, you never, forget it.
We have a question in here. I fly off the handle and find myself in shouting matches with my kids. I know it's immature, but I just can't seem to stop myself. How should I try and resolve things afterwards? I do always apologise, but I feel I'm permanently hurting my relationship with them.
Okay. So first of all, I think this might be the first generation of parents who are trying to model emotional regulation. They may not have seen that modelled themselves as children. And even though the parents were doing nothing wrong, they just didn't actually, like what I heard in those, you know, voice pops was the people had the language to be able to articulate how they actually feel. It's such an actual gift, but it is a language. Whereas I think that language didn't exist beforehand. So it isn't a blame, but we do go back into those old kind of ways of reacting. And sometimes our kids are, this is not their fault, but they do trigger us because perhaps you wouldn't have responded like that to your mother or your father. So when your child feels safe enough to actually go at you and then you lose it, the question is, how long has this been building up? And I think people's capacity at this time of year, and so much goes into it. People are either, you know, hungry, or they've been out, or they're under stress at work. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of demands. There can be a lot of noise. So sometimes I just say to people, like, no joke, beware of what you're actually wearing. Sometimes, like, literally open a window in the kitchen, bring the temperature down, take, you know, a layer off if possible. If you have that argument and, you know, with your child, understand what's going on for you. Have you had any space for yourself at all that day?
I know the question in all around apologies and taking responsibility and apologising for your input into a fight. But what do you do when someone doesn't apologise after a fight, even when you have? It's a good question.
It's telling you a lot, though. Mm-hmm. It's telling you about the health of your relationship. It's telling you where the other person's at. And again, it's not even a judgment piece. Some people feel apologising is like in a power battle that they've lost. Yeah, there is this kind of concept. And when we look around the world, we can see that kind of, you know, I will not apologize or take responsibility. Whereas honestly, what I was hearing in the people sending in, you know, how they respond was that there's a generosity, an ability to kind of reflect, an ability to be mature. And maturity does not come with age. You have to actually develop it. Like, I sometimes have seen kids who can be more mature than adults because they are connected and it's not so engrossed in their identity of I have to be right.
I suppose as well that you're accepting, you've apologized. You can't really control somebody
else. You can never control anyone else. But it does, like, you can't force anything. Mm. But it's kind of giving you an area of, well, this is where we are in this relationship, and then you might have to adjust accordingly.
Yeah, accept. That can be the hardest thing. We actually have a question, an audio question in.
Is there any way I could feel less guilty after an argument?
Oh, yeah, I second that.
So I think guilt as an emotion serves a purpose and a function, as all emotions do. And it's always like the lady who, you know, saying, I feel really bad after, mm-hmm. you know, shouting with my children. But if we come at this with curiosity and a bit of compassion and go, okay, so why did I lose it? Had I said the same thing 100 times? Had people been ignoring me? But what was underneath that for me? So you're taking responsibility of, am I feeling unheard, unseen, kind of doing the same thing over and over again? But with guilt, it's to ask yourself the question, have I done something wrong? And if you have, yeah, take responsibility, genuinely apologise, and it's up to the other person and how they receive that. But then also there is a part where you go, I'm going to try and do it again. Like, I think we have a really funny narrative around conflict. Like, couples often say to me, like, we never fight, but I would not, as a psychologist, think that was a good thing. Because it is really important to be able to voice and feel safe.
And how you feel.
How you feel, or if something's happened that upsets you. So I actually think the health kind of thermometer of your relationship is if you can actually be honest about how you really feel. Mm-hmm. You know, so
I don't feel as bad now. I hope my husband's listening to this.
Yeah, but it is true though. Like, you know, like if like one person said there, you know, they mightn't actually find it easier with one person. I think he was saying his mom, but perhaps that's because if he's done that before and it hasn't been heard, or it's been dismissed, or there was an angry response, you learn there isn't any point in doing this. And actually, that can be actually a healthier thing to do sometimes as well.
Well, I definitely think we're going to have you back in again, because there's so many questions coming in. So it's definitely a hot topic. Thank you so much, Alison Keating, coming in. And for all of her great advice, you can follow Alison on Instagram at The Practical Psychologist. So that's at thepractical.psychologist. And that's all we have time for this evening and for this season. My thanks to all of the team here: John Daly, Louise Ní Criadán, Demi Geraghty, Raymond Doherty, Bláthaigh Kína, and of course all the brilliant sound ops. And we have Liam Mullen on sound this evening. Thank you to all of you for always being so willing to get involved in the show. You can listen to this show and all the other shows in previous seasons on the RTÉ Radio Player app, on rte.ie/supercharge, or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope each and every one of you has a safe and peaceful Christmas. Make sure you check in on each other. And most importantly of all, mind yourselves and mind each other until we meet again.
Supercharged with Anna Geary on RTE Radio 1.
And Supercharged is an Ojo production for RTE Radio 1.